Good morning and welcome to Cosmic Influence. We are the show that explores the possibility that ancient civilizations may have been correct in their belief that history moves in a great cycle with high ages of enlightenment and low ages of darkness. My name is Walter Cruttenden and I am here with co-host Jeff Bettino.
How are you?
And we are going to have a terrific guest on today. But before we get to that, for you new listeners, just wanted to explain a little bit about what we're about. And that is, both Jeff and I work at the Binary Research Institute, which is a nonprofit foundation here in Newport Beach, California. It's an archaeoastronomy think tank. And that's where, for the last several years, we've been researching the binary theory of history, if you will, or the idea, the very ancient idea, that history moves in a great cycle. Some ancient cultures believe that our sun has a companion star, and as that as we go around that companion star, it brings about a rise and fall in the ages, an ascending cycle and a descending cycle. The Vedic Indians called this the Yuga cycles. The Greeks broke it into the iron, bronze, silver, and golden age. And other cultures had other names for it. For example, the Hopi called the different epochs within the cycle the different worlds, and the Mayan called them suns. And so we study all of this stuff, and we meet with other researchers that are also exploring alternative histories. And some of those include Graham Hancock, Robert Bovall, John Anthony West, John Deering, John Major Jenkins, and many of these speakers have been at our conferences, the Conference on Procession and Ancient Knowledge, as well as individual talks that we've been giving. And anyway, we have a lot of fun just exploring this subject, and we like to interview authors, explorers, researchers that bring sort of new angles to this idea that long, long ago there was once a golden age. And so our author today really brings some insight to that issue, and I'd like Jeff here to give us a little background on her.
And I will do that. Hi again, I'm Jeff Bettino, and thanks again for joining us. If at any point during the show you'd like more information on the Binary Research Institute or Walter's book, Lost Star of Myth and Time, please visit us online at binaryresearchinstitute.org. Today, Walter, we're joined by Dr. Susan Gregg, and I'm really excited to have her on the show. She's got a great background, and I think something that all of you, our listeners, will be interested in as well.
I'm super excited, too. I know you're going to tell us about some of her work, but I've just been reading one of her books, Dance of Power, and it's really moved me. It's got some insights from some very mysterious Indians that she met. And she goes on quite a journey and comes up with some very enlightening points of view.
That's fascinating. And she's actually written six books, including The Complete Idiot's Guide to Short Meditations, which is her most recent book, Dance of Power, as you have, and the award-winning Mastering the Toltec Way. For the last two decades, she has taught thousands of people how to be happy regardless of what is happening around them. Susan teaches people how to use their mind as a powerful tool to totally transform their experience of life. She believes it is our birthright to be happy and that magic and miracles are a natural part of everyday life. In her gentle, loving, yet powerful way, Susan empowers people to create a life fulfilled with happiness, joy, and ease.
And once again, the way this kind of fits in for our listeners is that we not only explore the archaeology, the mythology, the astronomy of this great cycle, but we're looking at what it was like in the long ago higher ages, the silver and golden ages. And I think Susan has some glimpses into that time that comes from her experiences with the Indians in Mexico that she met, as well as comes from her studies of meditation and hypnotherapy.
I agree. I think she's definitely done a lot of work that can kind of help us apply the idea of living in higher ages to our daily lives today. How can we bring about a better consciousness within ourselves and apply that to to the way we live in the world.
Right. In the end, that's what it's all about, trying to make a better world. So look forward to meeting with her. Perhaps, you know, you can give websites once again and tell people about the upcoming conference on Procession and Ancient Knowledge before we run to a quick break here.
Yeah, once again, if you're interested in any of our topics, please visit our website, www.binaryresearchinstitute.org. And also visit our website if you're interested in seeing Walter speak or any a number of other guests that have been on the program before as well, including Graham Hancock, John Anthony West, John Daring, John Burke, Robert Bovall will be joining the conference this year as well. It's the Conference on Procession and Ancient Knowledge, and it's taking place this October 6th and 7th at UC San Diego in La Jolla, California. Once again, please visit our website, binaryresearchinstitute.org, for more information on that and the topics we discuss on the show.
And we'll be right back.
Lost Star of Myth and Time by Walter Cruttenden is the hot new bestseller, stirring controversy with a new view of ancient history. Graham Hancock calls the evidence in this epic book the key to the mystery of the ages. Where is present-day civilization headed? What did the ancients know about the cosmos? Do stellar influences affect consciousness and the rise and fall of civilization? Lost Star of Myth and Time answers these questions and more. Lost Star of Myth and Time at a bookstore near you.
Hi, I'm Walter Cruttenden, host of The Cosmic Influence. If you've ever wondered about the depth of ancient wisdom, I'd like to tell you about a big event coming up this October 6th and 7th at UC San Diego, the Conference on Procession and Ancient Knowledge, featuring groundbreaking presentations by Graham Hancock, Robert Bovall, John Anthony West, myself, and many others. Sign up today at cpaconline.com. That's cpaconline.com.
Welcome back to Cosmic Influence. My name is Walter Cruttenden, and I'm here with Jeff Pitino.
How are you?
And we have our special guest, Susan Gregg, on the line with us. Susan, are you there today?
I am, and aloha from Hawaii.
Good, excellent connection. I was reading your book, Dance of Power, The Shamanic Journey, which I guess is your first book.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just fascinated that at the very beginning you make reference to the ancient ones. I think it starts off here. The ancient ones were a race of men and women who understood the illusionary nature of reality and used the universal laws of nature to create a life based on unconditional love and self-discovery. And those words are so sweet to me and Jeff here, because this is what we study. And I'm wondering, you know, I want to hear the background of how you got into all this, but have you found that your journey has basically taken you to study ancient teachings?
Yeah, it was interesting because I kind of backed into was studying about the Toltec tradition, which is Carlos Castaneda, and it's pretty much fear-based. And when I was studying it, there was something that just didn't resonate with me. So I continued my explorations, and eventually what I ran into was what I call the Ancient Ones. And it's unconditional love, and it's, I think about it as magic and miracles and all that stuff. And it was very different than the way the Toltec tradition was taught. And, you know, when I came to Hawaii, I started working with this woman, and she talks about the same thing, you know, this Hawaiian spirituality, and then she talks about the spirituality of the Ancient Ones before the invasion of the Tahitians. And the same thing, she talks about the ancestors and the Ancient Ones. And so it's my feeling that prior to us kind of mucking with the knowledge with our fear-based stuff, there was a race of, I don't know whether it was a race of people, angels, whatever you want to call it, that really knew how to work with the energy of creativity, you know, with that energy of creation. And so it's been interesting because it certainly wasn't my intent when I first started my studies, but no matter what philosophy I've worked with, I find that if you go deep enough, you run into some other knowledge that predated it, and that seems to be expansive and unconditionally loving and non-judgmental and just wonderful.
Well, those sound like all higher age principles. I better back up here and tell us when you sort of started on this path and when you met I guess it's Sister Sarita and Don Miguel Ruiz.
Yeah, it was in the 80s. You know, I was a child of the 60s, so I did all my experimenting and reading of all sorts of odd books in the 60s and 70s. And
likewise.
Across the Toltec tradition, didn't think much of it. And then in the 80s, my mom died, and I went through a series of losses in my life and just decided to move to California to start a new life. And a friend of mine in Vermont, where I'd been living, was a spiritualist, and she had a spiritualist church, and she was just a really neat lady. She kind of reminded me of a female Santa Claus, and I used to hang out with her. And she gave me the name, address, and time of this church in San Diego where I was moving. And I got there on a Thursday, and Saturday I looked in the paper, and there was a spiritualist church that was meeting at the same address, different time. And I figured, how many churches can there be at the same address? So I went. And when I got there, there was this older woman in her late 70s named Mary, and she embraced me like her long-lost daughter. And we, you know, I mean, every Sunday I would go. I went for a couple of weeks, and then finally she came up to me and she said, there's somebody you got to meet. And she took me down to the barrio, and I met Sister Sarita. And Sister Sarita, to this day, I think, still only speaks Spanish, and I didn't speak Spanish. So it was an interesting experience for me, and it was definitely very different culturally. She's very much a healer and stuff, and they were doing all this, what I considered weird stuff. And then her son came over and asked me something in Spanish and motioned for me to come into the center of the circle, and I did. And I knew he wanted me to do something, I just wasn't sure what. So I looked around to see what other people were doing and basically did the same thing. And then he came over with a translator and asked if I would be willing to study with he and his mother. And I was a math and physics major, so this was kind of way out of my comfort zone. And much to my surprise, I said yes. And I studied with him for probably a year, year and a half before I really had any context or any words to use to describe what I was studying. Mm-hmm. And that was the beginning of an incredible adventure for me.
And this was Don Miguel Ruiz?
And at the time I started studying with his mom, and he was still a student. And of course, he's gone on to rewrite the book, The Four Agreements. So he's, had the opportunity to touch millions of people's lives.
Right.
And so it was really neat because he and I were students side by side for a number of years until Sarita decided it was time for him to take over the classes. And then I had the opportunity to become his student as well.
Right. And am I correct in understanding that he's a shaman, or at least a student of shamanism in the tradition of southern Mexico, like Carlos Castaneda?
Yeah, he's a Nahual, a Toltec master. And, same, Carlos Castaneda, Don Juan, that kind of stuff. And when I first studied with both of them, they taught in the traditional way, and it was very much based on domination and fear. And, the teacher would scare the student into having experiences, basically. And then I don't know what exactly happened, because I haven't really had the opportunity to sit down and talk with him, but after they told me I was done with my apprenticeship and to go and teach in my own way, he disappeared for about a year. And evidently he went into southern Mexico and he studied. And the Toltec tradition was part of his family heritage. And he had, if you read his books now, they're very much based in love. When I studied with him, and he's the first to admit that, he didn't teach in a love-based way. So he had some kind of a personal transformation as well. And now when he teaches, he doesn't teach in a fear-based way. He too embraces the essence of, whatever we want to call them, the ancient ones, I just call them the ancient ones for lack of a better term. But it was interesting to watch his process and his transformation as well, because, like I said, the fear part just never fit for me. It just never made sense that we live in a hostile universe or a predatory one.
Right. So what are some of the teachings that did, for example, he teach meditation, or?
Yeah, we did a lot. He was also a medical doctor, so he didn't believe in the use of hallucinogens. So we did all the explorations and the experiential work in meditation. And we would, we'd have a class. For me, I was going several times a week, but a lot of it was just meditations. And we would meditate, and part of what he would do is he would set us up in different formations, whether it was a triangle with a circle or just different, he would place people in different places, and we would have just incredible experiences. And you know, a lot of it, one of the things I talk about is intent and what is it we want to create. And so basically his and his mother's intent was for us to really, at a profound level, connect with the energy. And the gift was, when you connect with that energy sufficiently and you let go of your belief, what you experience is pure love. You know, the fear and the control and the rules and all that kind of stuff just naturally fall away, because that's not consistent with that ancient knowledge. That's not consistent with how the universe really, really works.
Right. I guess some of these meditations, from what I read, they're not just sitting there with eyes shut, but their eyes open, looking at the horizon or different scenes. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's really useful to, my most recent book is about meditation, various forms of meditation, and giving yourself permission to get in an altered state, which is, you know, just quieting your mind, basically, and focusing on a candle or looking at the ocean. One of the things I really love doing, I'm gifted enough to live in Hawaii, and I love going down, you know, somewhere around sunrise and just watching the sun come up and watching that ribbon of light. And one of the techniques that they taught me, which I thought was really powerful, is as human beings, we have a tendency, you know, we're like crows. We're attracted to the shiny things. We're attracted to the light. And what they taught me to do was to pay attention to the shadows. And really, it's the shadows that give definition to anything in life. And so they use the shadows as doorways to other universes and other experiences. And so just sitting and looking at the reflection of light on water and focusing your attention on the shadowy part, or looking at a tree, and rather than looking at the leaves, look at the space between the leaves.
That sounds like something straight from Don Juan right there.
Yeah, and your most recent book is The Complete Idiot's Guide to Short Meditations, correct?
Huh.
And yeah, I found you said something really profound at the very beginning of the book that really struck me, and it was just a comment that our imagination is just as real to our brain as life itself.
Mm-hmm.
And that really to the mind there's no real difference, and we can manifest a lot of what we want in the world through that, through just by changing the way we think and changing the way that we process information. And I think like something else you said, which was getting the allowing us to drive our brains rather than letting our brains drive us.
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, like the dog, you know, the tail wagging the dog or the dog wagging the tail. And with our minds, if we don't believe something, we can't see it. You know, like people that don't have any belief in anything other than physicality, the likelihood of them having a spiritual experience is very minimal. And most of us, I think, as kids, had quote-unquote imaginary play friends. Well, it's my belief that they weren't imaginary play friends at all. They were just beings that lived on a different energy plane that the adults had already learned to filter out.
Yeah.
And just changing the way we think about things and changing the way we see life totally changes our experience. You know, like right now, The Secret is all the rage. And we constantly manifest our experience of reality by what we tell ourselves. And if we change what we tell ourselves, we change our experience dramatically.
No doubt about it.
What connection have you found? What relevance have you found between the ancient teachings you've studied, like those of the Toltec traditions and Hawaiian spirituality? How do these philosophies apply to people living in our fast-paced society and our lives today?
Well, embracing those teachings has changed my life just incredibly. And yeah, even being in traffic, you know, you're in downtown L.A. and, you know, bumper-to-bumper traffic and you're moving 2 miles an hour. We can sit there and be incredibly stressed and miserable and wanting to be someplace other than where we are. Or we can just sit and be where we are and just really savor the moment. And when I tell people, you know, you can savor being in traffic, they always look at me a bit oddly, but you know, we can experience whatever we want in the moment based on what we tell ourselves. So I find that the ancient teachings allow me to be happy regardless of what's going on in my life. And in the process of doing that, what's going on in my life changes dramatically. You know, if I'm really happy and energetically just enthusiastic about life, the likelihood of me being abundant and attracting relationships that are loving and supportive and stuff like that is greatly enhanced. If I walk around judging everything and I'm a grump and, you know, I hate being in traffic and I hate my life and I hate my job, the likelihood of creating something that I really enjoy is not particularly great. So I think the ancient teachings really teach us how to be in this fast-paced world in a way in which we can savor each moment and make a decision in the moment what we want to create in the next moment. And begin, I think about it as lucid living, you know, the idea of lucid dreaming, where you wake up in the dream and then you can do whatever you want in the dream. I think the ancient philosophies can teach us to have a lucid life. And by that I mean being fully awake in our lives and creating exactly what we want when we want it, instead of feeling, you know, like we're this little bobbin drifting in a sea of life and we don't have any control over which way we go.
Right. Well, that is sure a common theme of these ancient cultures, you know, when they talk about the silver and golden age, the age of the demigods and the age of the gods to the Greeks, when really the sky's the limit. And in fact, we can't understand many of the mythologies. They seem very strange to us just because we don't relate to fairies and gnomes and gods and things like this.
Yeah, and the irony is we are God. You know, each of us are our own demigod, and we can create heaven or hell just between our ears. We don't have to change anything out there to change our experience. And in changing how we experience out there, what's out there changes. I mean, that's one of the paradoxes I found about applying the ancient principles, is if I try to use them to get something, what I'm doing is fear-based. It's control and manipulation. Whereas if I just do, you know, apply the idea that in the Hawaiian tradition they talk about it as aloha. If I just apply the being loving, being expansive, you know, being joyous, if I just apply that just to do that, then out there changes. And so that's one of the things I struggled with a lot at first.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, I'm going to use these things and then I'm going to create. And it didn't work.
Speaking
of these things, just use them, lo and behold, it did. So,
yeah, and speaking of changes, we need to take a real quick break here. We will be right back. You're listening to Cosmic Influence.
Lost Star of Myth and Time by Walter Cruttenden is the hot new bestseller, stirring controversy with a new view of ancient history. Graham Hancock calls the evidence in this epic book the key to the mystery of the ages. Where is present-day civilization headed? What did the ancients know about the cosmos? Do stellar influences affect consciousness and the rise and fall of civilization? Lost Star of Myth and Time answers these questions and more. Lost Star of Myth and Time at a bookstore near you.
Hi, I'm Walter Cruttenden, host of The Cosmic Influence. If you've ever wondered about the depth of ancient wisdom, I'd like to tell you about a big event coming up this October 6th and 7th at UC San Diego. The Conference on Precession and Ancient Knowledge, featuring groundbreaking presentations by Graham Hancock, Robert Bovall, John Anthony West, myself, and many others. Sign up today at cpaconline.com. That's cpaconline.com.
Welcome back to Cosmic Influence. I'm Walter Cruttenden here with Jeff Patino, and we are talking with author and guest Susan Gregg. Susan, just before the break there, we were talking about some of the changes in life, and you had moved to Hawaii when exactly?
I moved here in 1989, and I lived on Oahu until 4 years ago, and then I just moved to the Big Island 4 years ago, and just absolutely love it here.
Oh, I love it too. Yeah, we have a little house in Maui over there, which I don't get to visit often enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm hoping to make that big change and live there full time, hopefully in the not too far future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely a wonderful place.
But I too have enjoyed getting to know the Hawaiian culture. There's so much a beauty in nature there. It seems to be very reminiscent of a higher time on Earth, and I just hope that Western influences don't,
contaminate it too
much. Yeah, make too much of an impact.
Yeah. It's it's real interesting because I lived on Oahu for a number of years, and of course it's the most populated island, and people have pretty much, in my experience, made the transition into Western mentality. And over here on the Big Island, they still live, as they call it, live aloha. And I've been working with this Hawaiian woman, and you know, they call teachers here aunties, and she's just absolutely wonderful. And she talks about living aloha, and it's about love. And she talks about being trained by her grandfather. And some of the stories she tells are just absolutely wonderful. And one of the things her grandfather always said is, everything is pono until we think otherwise. And pono is a word that roughly means perfection. And so everything's perfect until we tell ourselves a story otherwise. And it's so true. You know, everything is perfect. And when I talk about that with people, sometimes it's like, but what about murderers? And what about, and well,
yeah, well, it's just
having an absolutely perfect experience. You know, from our limited perspective, it may not seem that way.
Yeah, well, it's easier to realize it the closer to nature you are. I just got back from a week up in the mountains here at Southern California. I was about 7,000 feet. We took a lot of hikes up to 8,000, 9,000, and I was with mostly 12-year-old boys, and we were meditating and just having a great time close to nature, you know, with no cell phones, TVs, gaming, anything like that. And I just realized how easy it is to be happy in nature. And it was a bit of a shock sort of driving back down into the smog basin of Southern California here.
And one of the nice things about meditation, you know, as mentioned earlier, our mind doesn't know the difference between a real event, quote-unquote real event, and an imagined one. One of the nice parts about meditation is we can literally sit down and imagine ourselves someplace out in nature. And one of my favorite meditations when my mind is really busy is to imagine myself sitting on the surface of the water. And, of course, at first it's rather turbulent because my mind is really busy. And then I just imagine myself sitting there and just seeing the waves begin to settle down until I'm sitting on top of this mirror-like reflection of water. And, you know, sitting on top of a mountain, I mean, I've had the gift of living in some really beautiful places, and whenever I get really stressed, you know, sitting in traffic, I can certainly be in traffic and bring the energy of sitting on a mountaintop watching the sunrise. Or I remember one time when I lived in San Diego, I went out to the desert and I watched the sunrise, and it literally took like 2 or 3 hours for the sun to fully rise. And just the changes in the colors and the horizon and the way the wind felt and stuff like that was just incredible. And I have that memory, so I can use that memory to generate that feeling no matter what's going on around me.
Yeah, well, we all need to hold those memories a little closer and hopefully rearrange our world a little bit so we can live a little closer to nature.
Yeah. Susan, one of the things you've said is that life's greatest tragedies can be our greatest gift. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, everything is relative, and it's all about our stories. And when I was a young girl, one of the things that happened to me is I was basically kidnapped by 2 young boys and molested. And for many years, that was, you know, a big thing in my life, and it was a tragedy, and it was awful. And it also became my greatest gift, because what it invited me to do was really go deep within my filter system so that I could see it and experience it in a different way. And it got to the point where part of what's happened as I've studied these ancient philosophies is I realized there's no such thing as right and wrong. There's just what is. And being responsible is very different than being at fault. When we're responsible, yeah, this is my creation, and there's nothing wrong with this creation. What else would I like to create? And so the experience of being molested as a young girl really invited me to look at beliefs, to look at assumptions that I had made. And it got to the point where I realized that my belief structure was such that the only choice of interaction that I had with those 2 young boys was what happened. And as I change my filter system, the invitation is very different. You know, it's not that I did anything wrong and that, you know, I was at fault because they did that. It's just I got to see how the 3 of us came together and did a cosmic dance. And with that cosmic dance, I could create whatever I wanted. So really, that experience was one of my greatest gifts, because since it was so traumatic, it really was a profound invitation for me to unravel a lot of my filter system.
Right. Well, that's a very, very healthy attitude, but it's also an attitude that it's hard for people to adjust to, especially going through such a heavy circumstance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and, you know, life is a process. You know, we plant a seed, and when I was a kid, my mother planted carrots, and I kept pulling the carrots up to see where they were, if they were done yet. She couldn't figure out why our carrots kept dying. You know, so I've learned, you know, you plant a seed, and then you nurture it. You don't keep pulling it up. And so I look at everything in our life as we're planting a seed.
Right.
And what is it we want to grow here? Do we want to grow fear, or do we want to grow love? And so, you know, it's not like I woke up one day and this was a wonderful experience. It was a process. It was a process in which, you know, I experienced the fear and the grief and the anger and the rage and the judgment and all that stuff. And I kept peeling the onion, and my intent was to get to a place of love.
Great. Well, our intent right now is to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back. You're listening to Cosmic Influence.
Lost Star of Myth and Time by Walter Cruttenden is the hot new bestseller, stirring controversy with a new view of ancient history. Graham Hancock calls the evidence in this epic book the key to the mystery of the ages. Where is present-day civilization headed? What did the ancients know about the cosmos? Do stellar influences affect consciousness and the rise and fall of civilization? Lost Star of Myth and Time answers these questions and more. Lost Star of Myth and Time at a bookstore near you.
Hi, I'm Walter Cruttenden, host of The Cosmic Influence. If you've ever wondered about the depth of ancient wisdom, I'd like to tell you about a big event coming up this October 6th and 7th at UC San Diego, the Conference on Precession and Ancient Knowledge, featuring groundbreaking presentations by Graham Hancock, Robert Bovall, John Anthony West, myself, and many others. Sign up today at cpaconline.com. That's cpaconline.com.
Welcome back to Cosmic Influence. I'm Walter Cruttenden.
And I'm Jeff Patino, and we are here with Susan Gregg today. Susan, welcome back to the program.
Oh, thanks very much for having me.
Susan, during the break, you were telling us a little bit about some of your travels, and I was hoping you could tell our audience some of the places you've been where there's strong evidence of ancient cultures and what you felt and learned at some of these places.
Sure. Yeah, I've taken groups to Mexico and Peru and Egypt and, you know, other places in Europe and things like that. But what I found is, you know, the energy of the ancient ones just is amazing. And Peru especially, the architecture. I remember standing in one place, they took us to a quarry, and you could see where they had been cutting this absolutely huge rock. I mean, it was the size of a room. And the cut between the original rock and the block they were making was so thin, I don't even think we could cut it that thinly with a laser. And so obviously they had some kind of technology that we're not aware of. And when I was in Egypt one time, and you know, one of the biggest scams is, I'll, you know, give me some backsheesh, give me some money, and I'll take you to meditate between the paws of the Sphinx. And I met this one guy, and he literally did. He took myself and a group of people to meditate between the paws of the Sphinx. And when I stood there and I looked up, because I didn't realize the paws were probably about 8 or 9 feet tall, and when I stood between those paws, the energy, and on its chest plate, I've never seen too much written about it, on its chest plate there was this big green stone, and there was a line in the middle, and there was mirror images of hieroglyphics on either side. And my experience of that is it was a time portal travel kind of thing. And it was just, you know, and I'm, like I said, I'm a math and physics major. So, you know, when I talk about things like time portals, there's part of me that goes, oh, you're talking about that stuff. But it was absolutely my experience that it was just a gateway.
But that's your intuitive feeling you got standing there at the time, huh?
Yeah. And, you know, and I did have an experience while I was meditating there where I saw the history of humanity, and it was amazing to watch, you know, civilization after civilization come and go, and how there seemed to be a beginning where it was expansive and nature-based and kind of loving, and then we'd kind of get into the control and manipulation and the war and the violence and the not caring for the earth, and then the civilization would disappear, and how it seemed to be a cycle that kept repeating itself. Hmm. And it's my hope that this go-around we can perhaps not do the complete cycle and just continue to evolve rather than have to go back to stone people kind of thing.
Yeah, well, you know, looking at the archaeological evidence, the indication is that this highly material age doesn't last that long.
No.
Otherwise, we'd be finding a lot more stuff, I think, in the past. But what you do find in very ancient cultures is, you know, megalithic structures are certainly great, great buildings that last a long time. But they're often aligned with astronomical phenomena, or they mirror certain star patterns, or you know, they have gateways that open to the equinox or the solstice, and they're just beautiful heavenly connections in some of these structures. So if they are building, it seems to be more attuned to nature.
Yeah, there's something, you know, significant about it, spiritually significant.
Yeah.
In September, I'm really looking forward to it. Every September, I go to Lithuania and I work for a month because I'm a best-selling author in Lithuania. They bought my book rights. And this year, besides going to Lithuania, somebody's putting together a trip for me in England, and we've gotten special permission from the Historical Society or something like that, and I'm actually going to get to do a ceremony at sunrise in Stonehenge.
Oh, wow.
And
oh.
I'm just really looking forward to that because, you know, I've seen Stonehenge, but of course you can't walk up there. And so it'll just be our group that will be allowed in the center of Stonehenge, and I'm kind of assuming, you know, at dawn there's not going to be a whole lot of other people around. So.
Boy, and what time of the year are you doing that?
I'm doing it September 30th, I think it is.
So right around the time of the fall equinox.
Equinox, yeah.
Yeah, just shortly thereafter. That's great. I've read a lot about Lithuania, too. I guess they have quite a bit of myth and folklore about ancient higher times. Who was the gal? We saw a tape of her. I think it was Maria Gumbatos. Are you familiar with her? She ended up teaching at UCLA sometime later, but
She did a lot of research into the goddess mythology and
right
culture.
And she grew up, I believe it was in Lithuania, and learned much of the myth and folklore, which led her to believe that there really was a very high ancient culture, and then went on and
I had a look to see where Lithuania was on the map when they asked me to come the first time. And some of the experience, I mean, it's a pretty flat country, and occasionally they have little hills, and they're generally considered sacred sites. And the first time I went there, they took me they called it a little walk, I called it an extensive hike, out to this place, and they didn't really know what it was about, and they haven't really done any archaeological digs, but they knew it was an old sacred site, and I stood there, and it was amazing. I mean, one of those, in Hawaii, they call it chicken skin moments, and the clouds kind of parted and the sunlight filled this area that we were in. And then all of a sudden the wind started to come up and it was like this little whirlwind around us. And I was just amazed. And I just stood there and felt very welcomed by the land and really got a sense of that these people used to literally live by magic. They lived very joyously and by magic, Merlin kind of, you know, magic. And that somehow or another we had lost that ability. And it just made me realize that, you know, we think we're very advanced, and in truth, we've lost so much of the richness of life.
Yeah, another interesting fact in many of the digs in old Europe, if you will, which, you know, really goes from Lithuania down through the back of Europe there, down into Greece, is of all these sites they found and this tremendous number of sort of goddess culture little statues, they haven't found any weapons that relate to this early Neolithic period.
Makes sense, because I think very much they were so much in alignment with the energies that weapons wouldn't be necessary.
Yeah, much more an agricultural-based culture versus, you know, the standard paradigm tenets of history are that we banded together initially as tribes and cities because we had to defend ourselves from other warring tribes.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting that as you go back far enough, you actually break these so-called rules of history.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, and I think that's part of, as we learn to embrace some of the ancient philosophies, I think we can bring that into our culture today.
Exactly.
And right now, we actually have to embrace another commercial break.
Okay.
So we will be right back. You're listening to Cosmic Influence. I'm Jeff Patino, and Walter Cruttenden, and our guest, Susan Gregg.
Lost Star of Myth and Time by Walter Cruttenden is the hot new bestseller, stirring controversy with a new view of ancient history. Graham Hancock calls the evidence in this epic book the key to the mystery of the ages. Where is present-day civilization headed? What did the ancients know about the cosmos? Do stellar influences affect consciousness and the rise and fall of civilization? Lost Star of Myth and Time answers these questions and more. Lost Star of Myth and Time at a bookstore near you.
Hi, I'm Walter Cruttenden, host of The Cosmic Influence. If you've ever wondered about the depth of ancient wisdom, I'd like to tell you about a big event coming up this October 6th and 7th at UC San Diego, the Conference on Precession and Ancient Knowledge, featuring groundbreaking presentations by Graham Hancock, Robert Bovall, John Anthony West, myself, and many others. Sign up today at cpaconline.com. That's cpaconline.com.
Welcome back to Cosmic Influence. I'm Walter Cruttenden with Jeff Patino and our guest today, Susan Gregg. And Susan, you've written six books in the past. What are you working on right now?
Right now I'm working on a book about angels and gods and goddesses and saints and Ascended Masters. I just got asked to write that a few days ago and I'm real excited about it. I think it's going to be real fun, and I'm exploring some of the older concepts of deities and just going to share it in a way that people can apply it to their life today rather than it just being a history book about this is what was. So yeah. I'm excited about it. I think it'll be fun.
That is fascinating. You know, the Greeks broke these four ages, the Iron, Bronze, Silver, and Golden Age, into characters of man, too. They said, you know, in the lowest age is the age of man. The next age, the one that we've just sort of re-entered on our way back up here, is the age of the hero. And certainly there's plenty of chances to be heroic in today's world. And then comes the age of the demigods and the age of the gods in the silver and golden age, respectively. And there are just tons of fascinating stories about these angels or demigods in ages of old. And also, we're starting to see more and more bright souls emerge today, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it's interesting because if you read some of the older literature, you know, there were a lot more visitations than we experience currently in society. And I think it would be a lot nicer if we could open up to other entities, other existences, and call upon their wisdom, call upon their knowledge and their love and their guidance.
Yeah, well, I guess we're getting back into an era where it might be once again politically correct.
It's a lot more politically correct than it was even 10 years ago. So.
Yeah, but it's just a mysterious universe, and there's all sorts of things going on that we've barely scratched the surface of. So look forward.
And one of the things that I find really, really powerful is when I stand someplace and say, I don't know. Because as soon as I know, I close myself off to other possibilities. But when I really allow myself to know that I'm clueless how all this works, and I'm curious, and I'm enthusiastic about it, and I like to understand, when I'm that way, I'm very receptive and open, and, you know, information will come to me, books will show up, magazine articles, I'll hear something on the radio, and the more open I am. And so I frequently tell people standing in a place of I don't know is really powerful.
Now, Susan,
so do you then, would you consider yourself an intuitive person in approaching your work rather than, I know you said you had a master's?
Yeah, math and physics are my background. I've become more and more intuitive, and I've really learned to trust the process because when I try to figure things out, I've come to realize that what I figure out is generally the booby prize, and it doesn't really get me what I want. So words like surrender, which I never would have used, and just trusting the process and being open to and all that sort of thing are stuff that I've just allowed myself to embrace and to play with.
I know you also, you hold a doctorate in clinical hypnotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
How, what are what are some of the parallels do you see between hypnotherapy and other meditative states? Are there connections there, and are there commonalities and differences?
They're basically all altered states, and an altered state is just really shifting gears in our brain. We have different brainwave frequencies. Most of the time we run around in a fairly high frenetic brainwave, and the more we get into alpha and theta and delta, we are able to access different energy states. And so with hypnosis, that's one of the things that you do, is you put people into an altered state, and you put them into a more receptive state. The conscious mind kind of lets go, and you can talk more directly to the subconscious. And I think mystical experiences happen not when we're in normal everyday consciousness, but when we let go and we get into an altered state.
I think kind of one of the utopian views that a lot of people apply towards what we would consider a higher age or a golden age is greater peace throughout the globe. And I know, like, world peace is one of those utopian goals.
Mm-hmm.
It's been said that world peace starts with each individual. How does inner peace really apply to that?
Well, I think if we're not peaceful within ourselves, we can't possibly create world peace, because if we're having stress and turmoil within ourselves, that's going to be reflected in our world. And so I think it was Gandhi. I don't remember who it was, but somebody said, you know, peace begins within, or it might have been the Dalai Lama. And I think it's true that as we strive to and allow ourselves to achieve inner peace, that begins to have a ripple effect in our world. And I would like to think that there is that hundredth monkey effect, where if enough of us achieve inner peace, it will be reflected out there and there will be peace in the world.
What suggestions do you have for people that want to become happier and want to find that inner peace?
Right, I noticed you had a lot of exercises and things in the back of your book, which I haven't really studied yet, but...
Yeah, I'm a big one for that. I had somebody come to me years ago, and she was very happy because she'd read all these self-help books, and I asked her if she'd done the exercises, and she said no, and it was evident her life hadn't changed, and our lives only change if we take different actions. So one of the things I suggest, if somebody really wants to be happy and experience peace of mind, is to begin to develop, I call them bookends, something you do in the morning and something you do at night. Meditation is just a wonderful practice. It really allows us to, you know, biologically, and, you know, we send out all different kinds of hormones and stuff, and it's simple. You know, and people make it really complex, and you can do it as simply as just breathing and noticing your breath, and when your mind wanders, which it'll do, just gently bring it back to your breath, and when it wanders, you just gently bring it back to your breath again. And, you know, anything that you can do like that that really allows you to experience that peace and to realize that peace isn't something external. It's created by what we tell ourselves. And so even, like I said, in the midst of traffic, we can experience peace of mind. It's a choice. And you know, spiritual practices do take practice. So if you want to experience peace of mind, practice thinking thoughts that bring that to you.
Right. Well, speaking of bookends, we're getting close to the end of this program, and we're going to have to sign off soon, but first we wanted to remind people, what's your website?
My website is susangregg.com, SusanGregg.com. And I have lots of audio meditations on there, and I have a couple of visual meditations, and there's lots and lots of information. I've posted excerpts for most of my books and stuff, so you can really get a lot of good suggestions off the website. And you can also buy my books, and I autograph them and send them to you personally. So.
Great, great.
Excellent.
Well, I hope to have you come appear at one of our conferences sometime, Susan. And
well, that'd be wonderful. I'd love it.
Good. So thank you again for being on Cosmic Influence, and we look forward to talking to you in the future.
Okay, well, thanks for having me. Aloha.
Okay, aloha.
You're listening to Cosmic Influence, and we'll be right back.
Lost Star of Myth and Time by Walter Cruttendon is the hot new bestseller, stirring controversy with a new view of ancient history. Graham Hancock calls the evidence in this epic book the key to the mystery of the ages. Where is present-day civilization headed? What did the ancients know about the cosmos? Do stellar influences affect consciousness and the rise and fall of civilization? Lost Star of Myth and Time answers these questions and more. Lost Star of Myth and Time at a bookstore near you.
Hi, I'm Walter Cruttenden, host of The Cosmic Influence. If you've ever wondered about the depth of ancient wisdom, I'd like to tell you about a big event coming up this October 6th and 7th at UC San Diego, the Conference on Precession and Ancient Knowledge, featuring groundbreaking presentations by Graham Hancock, Robert Bovall, John Anthony West, myself, and many others. Sign up today at cpaconline.com. That's cpaconline.com.
Hi, and welcome back to Cosmic Influence with Walter Cruttenden. I'm your co-host, Jeff Pitino, and we've just been listening to a fantastic interview with Susan Gregg. Once again, if you'd like to visit her website, it's www.susangregg, it's spelled G-R-E-G-G.com. And if you'd like any more information on Cosmic Influence or the topics we discuss here, please visit our website at www.binaryresearchinstitute.org.
And don't forget the big Conference on Precession and Ancient Knowledge that's coming up this October 6th and 7th at UCSD in beautiful La Jolla, California. And you can get more information on that at
our website, which is www.binaryresearchinstitute.org.
Good. And once again, thanks for listening to Cosmic Influence. We look forward to talking with you in the next show. And in the meantime, bring on the higher ages.